Oh, good morning and welcome. And I have a surprise. It's my special hourglass with orange sand, fresh from Amazon. And I brought it today. Well, of course, the talk is called The Wisdom of the Hourglass. And last summer, I was visiting our friend Ram Dass on Maui, and someone had given him an hourglass that he's keeping on his breakfast table. And every morning when he came down, he would roll in his wheelchair up to the breakfast table and turn the hourglass over and say, "Let the day begin." So one morning I was looking at that and I said, "Well, is that all the time we have?" And he said, "You never know." So it reminded me of how much his teaching over the 45 years that I've known him has focused on staying awake and alert in the now, in the present moment, because you never know how much time you have. And when he was turning 50, 37 years ago, he said, "You know, I think I should begin to investigate aging." And I said, "Isn't it a little early?" And he said, "I don't think so, because you never know how much time you have." And it was so interesting, you know, this man who had been a guide for so many of us in the 60s through the hippie years and beyond, now looking at aging and what that's all about. So the first thing that happened, I was 30 at the time, and the first thing that happened was the next time I saw him, I said, "How's your aging project going?" He said, "Well, I've discovered something fascinating." I said, "Tell me." He said, "Well, you know, I've been looking at what we do," like we had for years been going away on retreats for, you know, extended periods, meditation retreats and spiritual retreats of various kinds. And he said, "Well, I've just noticed something about what happens as we get older." He said, "Now, when we go into a meditation retreat," I know you had a retreat for the church recently, right? The usual fall retreat, has that happened? Yeah? And how many of you went? Okay, so you know what happens. I was there last year and then a few years before that. And so we go into a place where we're an institution, essentially, that where we're removed from the world so we can be free of all of the chaos and confusion of the world and just be in a quiet center where we can do our inner work. And we sit to meditate and pray, and when we do that, we close our eyes so we're not distracted by external sights, and we want the place to be quiet so we're not distracted by sound, and we take time generally to be alone. We are often in a room by ourselves, and we're not moving around necessarily very much. All of this freeing us to do our inner work. So this is what Ram Dass is saying about what he'd noticed. And he said, "Now, think about what happens to us naturally as we age. We lose our eyesight. We lose our hearing. We lose the ability to move around as much as we used to. Our friends start to die, so we wind up spending more time alone than we used to." And he said, "Isn't it interesting that that nature has designed things so that in the phase of life when we're naturally probably needing to think about going back to God, that nature just creates the perfect circumstance for that to happen." It's So we like it when we're in our 20s and 30s and we go into a retreat center and say, I'm so holy. Let me get holy this weekend. And then I'll go back and have fun. But when nature sort of starts taking things away, we don't like that. You know, that's a problem. And we resist it. And as a culture, you know, it's something that we refine to an art form in modern American culture, is how to deny aging and death. And, you know, it's interesting because yesterday Patricia and I were talking about what we're going to do this afternoon, and I got off on a tangent. She said, no, you have to remember, this isn't a dying workshop, it's an aging workshop. To which I replied, well, my problem is that I sort of realized that the reason we don't like aging is because it's the green room for dying, you know, and we don't like that. So maybe if we opened to both, because the truth of the matter is we have no guarantee that we're going to age before we die. I have over the course of my life had many people say to me, you know, I'd rather die young than get old. And I always think, why? You know, I mean, we make such a big deal about it, and I don't mean to in any way denigrate or diminish the challenges that are happening. I just had my 68th birthday 2 weeks ago. Yay! And you know, and I still have people say to me, oh, you're just a kid. Or I was telling you the story in the first service that on my birthday, we were coming home from, I was taken out to dinner, and getting out of the car, somebody said, what were you doing tonight? And somebody said, oh, it's John's birthday. And this person said, oh, really? How old are you? And I looked and I said, well, how old do you think I am? I was curious. What she would say. She looked and she said, 45? I said, I think you better have your eyes checked. She said, well, how old are you? I said, I'm 68. She said, not no way. No, you ain't no age. You do not know 68. I said, yes, I am. She said, wow. Now, you know, it's an interesting thing because I'm finding it kind of fascinating at this point, but I've been working with this stuff and the fear of this for, you know, 48 years since Ram Dass first introduced the concept. 38. I've never been good at math. It's probably why aging doesn't bother me. I can't quite... I don't know what these numbers mean. But you know, I mean, it's so fascinating because most of us, we've been raised and taught to treat this as if it's a mistake. You know, like the universe has made a mistake. These bodies shouldn't age. Well, they seem to age. And, you know, I'm all for being as healthy as we can and getting exercise and good diet and, you know, we've learned how to wring a lot more time out of these bodies than we used to think was possible. But the truth of the matter is they still age and decay and die. And, you know, the story I love to tell, this just had occurred to me a few years ago, so some of you probably heard this, but because I often see you in the fall, and I'm always thinking about how beautiful the fall is. I mean, most of us love the fall colors, you know. People make special trips to the Northeast to see the colors in the fall. And I think, well, the way we treat aging, it's like, imagine if when the fall colors started happening, we sent a crew of people out with green paint to paint all the leaves green again because we're freaked out that they're changing colors. And that's kind of how we treat aging, you know. And I can tell you, you can paint it, you can exercise it, you can feed it all the right stuff, and it's still going to die. Now, that, you know, of course, again, I've been doing this for decades, but I realized that there was a time when talking like this would be considered absolutely rude, if not just totally insane. So I may be totally insane. I don't intend to be rude. I don't mean to offend any of you. But it seems to me that our spiritual teachings and spiritual practices have been about coming into communion with that in us which never changes. And in a sense, what better way to do that than to be in a vehicle that does change? You know, it's very interesting. When we're young, we generally spend much of our time wanting to be older. And then we reach a certain point where we, you know, like, I mean, I remember my teenage years as just a nightmare. And then 20s is kind of a lot of confusion. And starting to stabilize a little in my 30s. But if you look back over your life and see how much of it you've missed because you've been wanting to be in the future, and then you get to a point where now you want to be in the past. And that means that we're never living now, in this moment. And so I'm going to read you a story that is from a being named Ramana Maharshi. Some of you may be familiar with him. And he was a great saint, one of the greatest saints in the history of India. And this is a story of something that happened to him when he was 18 years old, an 18-year-old kid, basically. I was sitting in a room on the first floor of my uncle's house. I seldom had any sickness, and on that day there was nothing wrong with my health, but a sudden violent fear of death overtook me. There was nothing in my state of health to account for it, and I did not try to account for it, nor did I try to find out whether there was any reason for the fear. I simply felt, I'm going to die, and began thinking what to do about it. It did not occur to me to consult a doctor or my elders or friends. I felt I had to solve the problem for myself then and there. The shock of the fear of death drove my mind inwards, and I said to myself mentally, without actually framing the words, now death has come, what does it mean? I was pointing out that in the 60s this would have been called a bad trip. But now death has come, what does it mean? What is it that is dying? This body dies, and I at once dramatized the occurrence of death. I lay with my limbs stretched out stiff as though rigor mortis had set in and imitated a corpse so as to give greater reality to the inquiry. I held my breath and kept my lips tightly closed so that no sound could escape, so that neither the word I nor any other word could be uttered. Well then, I said to myself, this body is dead. It will be carried stiff to the burning ground and there burnt and reduced to ashes. But with the death of this body, am I dead? Is this body I? It is silent and inert, but I feel the full force of my personality and even the voice of the I within me, apart from it. So I am spirit transcending the body. The body dies, but the spirit that transcends it cannot be touched by death. This means I am the deathless spirit. All this was not dull thought. It flashed through me as vividly as living truth, which I perceived directly, almost without thought process. I was something very real, the only real thing about my present state, and all the conscious activity connected with my body was centered on that I. From that moment onwards, the I, or self, focused attention on itself by a powerful fascination. Fear of death had vanished once and for all. Absorption in the self continued unbroken from that time on. Other thoughts might come and go like the various notes of music, but the I continued, like the fundamental Shruti note that underlies and blends with all other notes. Whether the body was engaged in talking, reading, or anything else, I was still centered on I. Previous to that crisis, I had no clear perception of myself and was not consciously attracted to it. I felt no perceptible or direct interest in it, much less any inclination to dwell permanently in it. Now, this day that Ramana Maharshi is describing was the day he became enlightened and became one of the greatest saints in the history of India. And one of the things that's always fascinated me about this story is that I'm thinking about contemporary America. An 18-year-old comes to you and says, "I'm terrified, I'm going to die." What do? You rush them to the emergency room so that they can get pumped full of Thorazine or some other anti-anxiety medication. You know, calm down, you're having an anxiety attack. No, you're just seeing truth. I'm going to die. Very interesting. So just to throw this out for consideration, imagine the possibility that that fear that we have run away from for so long could actually be the key to unlocking the door to living in the present moment that we've always yearned for. And that we have given ourselves short shrift by sweeping it under the carpet. It may be right there in front of us, that the reality of our mortality is the thing that can keep us awake. So I'll tell you another story about Ram Dass. Not this summer, but a few years ago I was visiting with him. I go every year, at least once a year. And I'd been there for about 3 weeks at his house on Maui. And we'd had a wonderful, wonderful time. And everybody knew, you know, I was flying out the next day, come back to the mainland. So that night at dinner, we're sitting around the dinner table, as we always do, and Ram Dass turns to me and in this very melodramatic tone says, "This is the Last Supper." And I looked at him and smiled and said, "Thank you for reminding me." And we went upstairs after dinner to watch a movie, which we often do. And he turned to me just as the movie was starting and said, "This is the last movie." And now we go to bed. And the next morning, I often get up before, he gets up upstairs and comes down later. So I'm downstairs in the living room in front of the puja table, the altar, meditating. And I sort of sense, you know, can sort of hear his wheelchair coming. And he comes up and he parks right next to me while I'm meditating. Imagine, I mean, this is my spiritual teacher. Leans over, gets right up next to my ear, and says, "This is the last meditation." And then we go to breakfast, and of course he looks over and smiles. "This is the last breakfast." So I'm getting ready to leave at about noon that day, and he came into the front hall to say goodbye, and he reaches out his arms, and we have a hug, and he goes, "This is the last hug." And then I looked at him, and he looked at me, he said, "Been nice knowing you." And I looked at him, I said, "RD, is there some reason that you've been laying this last thing on so heavily the last couple of days?" And he just smiled and shrugged his shoulders. And I said, "Well, it's beyond nice knowing you. And maybe we'll see each other again." And he said, "Maybe." And off I went to the airport. But it was very interesting. Now, I've seen him, that was about 5 or 6 years ago, so I've seen him 5 or 6 times since then. We've had wonderful visits. But I realized that the quality of the visit has changed because we've already said our last goodbye. And it's like every time I see him, of course, I felt this way, most of us have, ever since he had his stroke in 1997. Like, you know, every time we see him, it's a bonus. And we don't know how we got so lucky to have so many bonuses. So I would just invite you to consider that when the way you've been taught to pretend that you're not getting older, or to not think about it, just allow for the possibility that maybe if you did reflect on it once in a while, it might really wake you up. And, you know, some of you know, almost died when I was 3 from polio. So I've had a lifetime of awareness that, as Carlos Castaneda used to say, keep your death on your left shoulder. It'll keep you sane. Very interesting. It's like something that's always out there lurking. You never know. Today, the last day? I don't know. But I want to read you something else. This one is a great spiritual teaching from a Hallmark greeting card. It says, just a line to say I'm living. I'm not among the dead. Though I'm getting more forgetful and more mixed up in the head. Sometimes I can't remember when I stand at the foot of the stair if I must go up for something or if I've just come down from there. And before the fridge, so often, my poor mind is so full of doubt. Have I just put food away or have I come to take some out? And there are times when it is dark out with my nightcap on my head. I don't know if I'm retiring or just getting out of bed. So if it is my turn to write you, there's no need for getting sore. I may think that I've written and I don't want to be a bore. Remember, I do love you and I wish you were here. It's nearly mail time, so I'll say goodbye, dear. There I stood beside the mailbox with my face so very red. Instead of mailing you my letter, I have opened it instead. I love my new bifocals and my dentures fit me fine. My hearing aid is perfect, but Lord, I miss my mind. So my recommendation would be, you know, I was telling Ram Dass when I first met him about my first spiritual awakening experience, which happened when I was 18. It's a big age for a lot of things. But, you know, I told Ram Dass, as I thought I was losing my mind, he goes, really? And you did? And I said, yeah. He said, that's wonderful. Congratulations. So it may not be as bad as you think. It may not be as bad as you think. So, one last thing. This is from the Zen tradition called the Evening Gatha. Let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes and opportunity is lost. Each of us must strive to awaken. Awaken! This night, your days will have diminished by one. Take heed. Do not squander your life. So this afternoon, Patricia will probably put some duct tape over my mouth so that I don't talk about dying and she can talk about aging. But we'll be here together, and most of you know Patricia, and it is such grace for us to be able to persuade her to come and speak to us this afternoon. So we would invite all of you who can to join us and be here with us from 1 to 4, and I suspect it will be just delightful. I'm certainly delighted about it. So, and I'm delighted to be with all of you this morning, so thank you for coming. And if you can't be with us this afternoon, have a wonderful day. We love you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you.